you have some questions from previous ones, that's also good. We interpret.
There's a thing that will research your main hobbies.
We always interpret. Frog doesn't have the same apparatus to articulate in our language the word how we re-articulate and hear through Dhvani that we would articulate frog. That's why we articulate different animals differently in different languages. Did you notice this? Cuckoo doodle doo does not occur to me cuckoo doodle doo at all. We have kukuriku in Russian. Kukuriku. And not cuckoo doodle doo or something. But other, like bear, meh, moo, we have moo for the cow. What do you have for the cow?
English is moo.
Moo, yes. We say moo, I do 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 moo in Ukrainian. Moo, I go, I come home. The cow, when she comes, she is making the sound moo that she arrives. Yeah? If you lived in the village, you know how it is. It's a communication. Well, there is inner hearing, there are inner planes where these sounds occur and some calls suddenly I hear clearly in the physical. Somebody calls me, Vladimir! And I know who. Why? Suddenly, from nowhere. It's some, you know, subtle hearing breaking through to some kind of subtle matters. It's like you see also visions suddenly in front of you, where it comes from. It wasn't there. It was from your inner space it came into outside. And it was so vivid that even eyes could see it. In meditation you have this phenomenon that suddenly you see light with closed eyes. Such strong light from somewhere that you open eyes and see, look, it wasn't there. It wasn't there. It was from within. But it was so strong that it even affected our eyes. So this mimicking sounds from outside through our apparatus, all these sounds like Bach, Buch, slapping is also kind of coming from both origins. So there is so-called knock-knock language. Knock-knock means this imitating sounds from outside through our apparatus and recognizing them as such. And there is other language which is articulating matters which are more subtle to our consciousness. It comes from the system of etymons, root sounds, which are not knock-knock language, which is completely different, has different origin. So these two origins are mixed here. And we think that we imitate outer reality, but we are not. We are imitating inner reality through the language, the reality of consciousness. It's a big question of these two overlapping, two origins overlapping all the time. We are speaking also very horizontally many times, as usual we do in our conversations. We don't speak great matters. Yes? We relate those matters to the immediate context, nearly like animals do, not very far away from them. And sometimes we have this flood of some inspiration which comes from God knows where, from above. And then that word is something different. It uses the same conversational language, but it brings some new, fresh perception. So these two horizontal and vertical languages, so to say, coexist all the time.
Expand on the statement that our language comes from an inner, just
course.
Is that where the roots come from?
Yes, our inspirations, our great inspirations come from within. And they dress themselves into the language we know. Otherwise, we would not be able to understand what it is and why it is coming through. So whatever language we offer it to dress it in, that it will take. If I am an artist and I am looking for inspiration to make a beautiful picture, I am proposing that language of art to this inspiration. This is my language. Or I am a dancer and I am waiting for this to appear and it flashes onto me and I am dancing in that moment. Everybody recognizes that it was true. It wasn't some only skill, there was some inspiration, some truth in it.
I'm referring to the original words. Yes. Where there's no language at all, those words came from.
Language is only a madhyama speech, as we saw it, madhyama vak, where the linguistic reality can offer for this inspiration something to choose to dress it or to choose to express itself through for us to understand. But we can't function otherwise. We cannot really communicate by those flashing inspirations. Maybe we can. One day we will be using it directly as yogic consciousness can do it. But we need language for that, communication for that to be expressed for our mind, because if our mind does not understand it, it just goes unnoticed. And Sri Aurobindo somewhere says that all these inspirations are flooding us over, but we are not even aware of them. We do not see that they are flashing down all the time. We do not have perception and language to catch them and to let them stay. And to enlighten us. They are always there, but we are not trained enough to allow it to dress it into language. So this is the language and that is the word. The word is always coming to change something within our environment, our individual or collective environment. So today we are having a very interesting topic, a little boring for those who do not like grammar, but absolutely essential for those who want to understand how we speak and what it is all about. It is the topic of noun, the noun and the verb. Now, it would be very interesting for me to know what distinctions you could make between the two.
Static and living.
Very good, very good. Well, noun is also living, but differently, yes, more static.
Thing and movement.
Thing and movement.
Thing and energy.
Yes. Being and becoming, yes, in philosophical terms. Very good. But there are more categories, more mental categories, which define these two different categories. And we will look into them, why they are there and what they really do.
Can be the doer and the doing.
Yes, the doer and the doing. The doer also can be the verb, and the doing can be the noun,
yes,
very easily.
Can
so what is that difference, what we apply, that we know that this is the verb and that is the noun?
The action.
The action. Yeah. Can a noun act? Name. Is name acting? When it is pronounced, for example, I say Rama. Is it acting when I am saying it?
Maybe not the pure name, but what about those names which are like participles or verbal nouns?
Yes, well, there is another category of verbal nouns. Actually, all nouns are verbal,
yes,
and all verbs are nominal. Mm. So, in a way, you can't escape it. There are no pure verbs.
Yes.
which are only acting. There will be always some actor there involved in that acting. So the definition is kind of somewhat...
Because sometimes it just reminds me to the translation what I'm doing of Sanskrit and then into German. And then I noticed that so many of these very sentences, they are actually maybe one time one word in the whole long sentence, the whole pattern, and the others are not one. Sometimes even the word is not there.
We see.
Just the public speaker. And then if I translate it in my mother tongue like that, then the people tell me this is doing something wrong and make it difficult.
Yes, what is this event in general? Suppose something is happening, happened, or takes place. What is this? Is it a verb? It's a noun? Or both?
Right. So it's doing something as it is the manifestation.
Right.
So it's getting tricky.
Yes. I think this is the major question for all those linguistics from the beginning of time. Was there first the verb or the noun? By the way, and there are many answers, and many, two answers. The verb was first and then the noun was first. There are two different schools basically, and all in between varieties of different definitions. So I'm giving you two definitions here, which is interesting, of Yaska, where he says that there are two, nama and akhyata, where is the name and explanatory name. For him there is no verb as such, it is only explaining the major name. Yes? Predicate, that which is to explain the major name as it is to be introduced into the context or environment. So, I am going means I, first name, am going. I am the actor of, so I am in the, so to say, in the state of going. This is the secondary name. There is no verb. There is an explanation of the first name. I am going. Going is the name. It's not a verb. Now, from Panini's time, now Panini introduces Kriya, which was not introduced before. Kriya is doing. And in that sense, of course, there is a sense of time, it is. And you can see it that 600, 500 BC, it's somewhere that time where there was a shift from one paradigm to another, from that mythical structure of consciousness to more mental structure of consciousness. It is in this mental structure that we think in terms of verbs and in terms of time. There was no such phenomena as time before, in that proper, pure sense, as we know it now, past time, present time and future tense. There were no such tenses. These are mental categories. They appeared later. And it's quite interesting to see this shift. Just 100 years and there is the whole shift.
Is the explanatory name the same as the secondary name you mentioned?
Yes. It explains the first name. If I say to you, we were doing this exercise, I, and then I don't continue, I say you, what, this what you, what I have to finish it. Finish it means I have to explain what I mean by saying that I, where is that secondary name? Once it is explained, it is clear. Before it is explained, it's not clear what is I. It's very interesting. And why it is not clear? It should be clear. If I say a tree is, why it's not clear?
A tree is for itself clear.
No, it's not clear. We cannot think anymore in terms of a tree is. Exists is another word, but if I say a tree is an auxiliary verb in English, so you mean something to say and everybody is waiting what you want to say. So it's three dots. And tree is, by the way, if I will tell you, I would like to explain to you all these things in more detail, and you see it's still hanging. I'm not finishing the sentence. I finished many sentences in between, but I didn't finish a major sentence. I didn't explain a major name with Akhyata. So Akhyata has to explain it. Then it is finished. We put it into our pocket. We understand what it is. A tree is beautiful. Oh, thank you. Thank you for not torturing us. So is beautiful is Akhyata. To be beautiful, to be anything, to be going, to be shaking, to be falling, to be flying, to be standing, and so on and so forth. So, in a way, Yaska is right. But then, what is this verb, what is this kriya doing in Panini's sense? You wanted to say?
I have a question. Mm. When you say the concept of time, probably not fully developed in three stories, then if primitive human beings communicated, presumably they weren't thinking of what happened and what will happen, but immediately things, just like animals do in the sense of they're not thinking about past and future, but their immediate thing. So the need for communication was very, like, in the moment.
Yes.
And they did not have a need for, say, what happened yesterday and what will happen. They were not sophisticated enough, and their life was not sophisticated.
Yes.
But
that's why they are innocent, and that's why they are true to the moment of time. Because whatever they do in that moment of time is not dictated by some thinking or some projection that it should be like this, or some dogmatism coming from somewhere, from somebody told me to do it this way and I will do it against the nature. They are following the drive of nature. Every time in the moment, in the context, they see what is to be done. And if lion is not hungry, he will not kill animals. He's not interested, and antelopes are traveling over him, jumping over him, because they know that the lion is okay.
Until when did tense time come in?
So it is clear here, 500 BC, we see the shift to kriya.
That's it.
Yeah. We see it everywhere. In Greek civilization, the same. All over the world, we see 500 BC is some kind of, there is Buddhism, there is Lao Tzu coming in with Daoism, there is Confucius, the same time. So strange. Yeah. All these greatest philosophies of mental structure appear in this time.
Is that what the same as the Veda, there was everything was in one, would it then be more this, what was explained, everything is, what you say, is in the creation in the old Veda. And then came the mind, then the shift.
Yeah.
It's a similar step then.
Yeah. So what is happening within the verb? Verb appears as a category of mental structure of consciousness, which has a particular most important feature is time. The name with time is the verb. The name which has a particular time in the mental structure, not in the previous. In the previous it is something else, and we will look into this because there are more categories and interesting to distinguish between the two, which noun doesn't have. I am not saying it yet now. I will show you lakaras, sarvadhatuka forms, and you will recognize how beautifully it is arranged in Sanskrit language. So these two, as Panini defines, suptingantam padam. Padam, the word is of two kind. There is sup and ting, that means noun and the verb. There is no other kind. Very simple definition. And how come we have this, we have avyayas, we have pronouns, we have so many particles, and they are all falling either into sup or into the ting? Two simple definitions. Either they are acting as a verb or they are acting as a noun. And there are, of course, different words in between, like adverbial use and so on and so forth. Adjectives from the nouns, from the verbs and so on, participles. But basically there are two major categories of thinking. One is static, as you said rightly, another is dynamic in some sense. Or one is primary name and other is secondary name, which explains it in the context. So I wanted to go with you today through noun category for the first time and to see how it is presented in Sanskrit language with major sup paradigm and categories of karakas, and then to go to ting and see how it is presented categorically. And then we will learn something very interesting. Because it is arranged in a very philosophical way. So, subantasya shat karakaha santi. For those who study Sanskrit, it's interesting. Of subanta, of sup, there are six karakas. And karaka, it's a term introduced, pre-Paninian term, but Panini in 500 BC introduces this very definitely. These karakas are distinguished from the cases, or how do we call them, sup-paradigm, vibhaktis. Nominative case is not karaka. Nominative case or accusative case is only a syntactic form which word takes in order to be cognized in the speech. But karaka is the agent or the actor which makes a semantic connection between verb and noun. It is that subtle thing which is always there when the noun and verb are expressed. That's the very thing which we cannot define. How come that noun becomes a verb and verb becomes the noun, and what is there? What is there in between? What makes it possible? And that is karaka. Karaka is the maker or the semantic agent of syntactic structure, if you like. So, karta, the actor, produces what we know as nominative case, prathama vibhakti. Yes? That is what we are using when I say a tree is beautiful. A tree is a nominative case. Yes? But behind it there is a karaka. Karaka which makes tree an actor who will act now in this particular environment as beautiful. And will be cognized as such. The second case, I didn't write it in English, I should write nominative, accusative. Should I write immediately? So I will write in this brief, nominative, accusative. For those who studied Sanskrit, grammar in general would be very interesting. This is instrumental. So let us look into this three first. Karta is the actor, nominative. Karma is the action or act, which is the work. So first is actor, second is act, worker, work, and karanam, instrumental, is working. By what means the actor does the act. Now the tree is beautiful. We can clearly see here that the karma will be to be beautiful. But to become beautiful is that process of becoming, or karanam. Tree is beautiful by what? I don't know. With decoration. So this instrumental, by what it becomes beautiful, or with flowers, tree with flowers is beautiful. It is by flowers that tree is beautiful. Beautiful is karma. You see, I'm in staying in this difficult sentence. I'm not taking easier sentences, because if I take any act, it will be so much easier. I am going, yes, by the bus, and by bus I am going. So by bus will be instrumental how I am going, and my going is karma, where I go. I'm going to the school by bus. So to the school is karma, the object where I am going. I have karta, the actor, and karanam, by bus. It's quite interesting that the first three are in this very position. You can see nominative, accusative, and instrumental. And all of them have these karakas. Karta, karma, karanam. Now, what would be next karakas? Sampradanam is dative case. Dative is to give, yeah? Giving. How do you put it? Otherwise, dative, you know it, those who are from Italian background, dative is okay for them, yes? For those who are not from Italian background, they will ask what is dative. Dative is to give, giving oneself. Sampradanam, giving forward totally oneself. And apadanam is ablative case, bringing out, or deviating from, moving from, away. Sambandha is what we call genitive case, relation. And adhikaranam, locative case, location. What I want to emphasize here is that these four are different from those three, and this sixth case is completely different. The sixth one is not considered to be karaka, only these seven. Why? Because the sambandha, when the relations are defined, genitive case, is not relating to the verb. It relates to the noun. Yes?
It relates to the noun.
Yes. Relation is between noun and noun. Yes? He is father's son. Father's son is genitive case. But the relation of sambandha, genitive, cannot be related to the word. All the rest are relating to the word. And notice how interestingly they have these relations. There must be an action within the noun, and that action is expressed through these karakas. By the way, I want to say there are no more karakas. These are all the karakas we have, all the actors within our consciousness, mental consciousness. We can...
Would it be possible to get a print of him? Sure.
If you like, it will be also on the website. You can take it from there anytime. Yes, you don't need to carry it. Just type in and drop this to your computer if you want to. I print it out in PDF, that it will not change the script. I am calling here for some very serious introduction. By the way, I think it is one of the most interesting things altogether. Did you see that there are seven cases, or seven karakas? Six karakas, but there are seven vibhaktis. Prathama vibhakti, Dvitiya, first, second, third case, fourth case, fifth case, sixth case, seventh case. They are not even named, they are only by numbers. Why they are by numbers? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there are three different numbers. Ekavachanam, singular, Dvivachanam, dual, and Bahuvachanam, many, plural. Trivachanam sometimes they say also, of three. Three means many. Two means two, it's not many yet. And one means one. So the ancient language had these three, and also Latin, old Latin, has still this, and every language has. When we speak about glasses or trousers.
Latin has five.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean Vachanam. I mean the numbers. Numbers, dual number stays in every language up to now. The glasses is a dual number, trousers is a dual number. We do not know about this. But it is hands. Hands we say in plural and dual both. But mainly when we speak about eyes, hands, ears, we use dual. Though in the form it is the same as plural. But trousers, definitely, it's when one trousers is there, then it's dual. Yes?
Well, it's referred to as a pair of trousers.
Exactly.
You normally say a pair of trousers.
Pair of trousers, yes. Pair of scissors, yes.
You can't say a scissor.
Yes.
Really annoyed when people are like, give me a scissor. What is that?
Crack and give him one scissor. So it's natural dual. When we say parents, we mean dual, yes? And when we say twins, it's dual, and so on and so forth. Heaven and earth, there are more dual. Dual cases which are constant there. Day and night, and so on and so forth. Yes, opposite and not fully opposite. They are not complete without each other. So, ancients saw this possibility that Dvivachanam has to be expressed separately from Bahuvachanam. It makes something, some other meaning, and it's quite interesting. So all these karakas, they have three different numbers, which makes it 21. And this is what I'm wanting to say. These 21 laws of our existence are here, imprinted. There are no more laws, and they are in the right order. First is the actor, the doer, the self. Then the self is projecting itself into the otherness of self, in which he will be expressing itself as something, karma, an object of itself. He or she or it objectifies itself in such a way that it becomes karma. The doer is expressed in what he does. And the act of that doing, of that expression, is the instrumental to both. Don't you see here a beautiful logic of the highest kind? The first is Sat, the existent one. The one who is and cannot be replaced by anything. The second is that which consciousness knows him as karma, as something which consciousness projects out of himself for himself to know himself, objectifies himself as in a mirror. He sees himself in the mirror of his own objective being. So to say, objective, very relative word here, because there is no objective yet. It's all within himself. And that process of seeing himself as such, knowing himself as such in his consciousness as karma, is karanam, ananda. So we see Satchit Ananda, first great trinity of these karakas. Ananda is the process of knowing himself. But if we go farther, it's even more beautiful. What is deity then? Sampradanam. It's not only deity, it's giving totally oneself forward. I'm translating literally this word, sampradanam. Sam, totally, pra, forward, danam, giving.
Is it the same language you use for surrender?
Surrender already is turned back. So this is not yet back, it's still forward. So that means that this family of 1, 2, 3, of this first accusative and momentary accusative and instrumental, is turned out of itself. Now, when it is within itself, actor knows himself as such by this particular act, it's one family closed within itself. But when this family gives itself away fully for the creation, when the sacrifice is made of that actor who knows himself already as bliss, that is the dative. He moves out of himself into an otherness of himself. So the first three is still a perfect family, so to say, of numbers. We can even put them like this, which is a very simple formula. And this is a perfect mathematical formula. 1 + 2 = 3. You will not find anywhere anything like this afterwards. From 4, it is never matching to this particular formula. No, no, it's true, it's true. 1, 2, 3, 1 + 2 = 3, you will not find afterwards. 2 + 3 = 5, not 4. The order and the quality and the quantity, they are completely matched. It is one family withdrawn within itself, the self knowing itself, staying within itself. And then it has to give itself out, and this is sampradana. So giving, as Panini describes it, it's very interesting, he describes dative karaka, and he says giving is always cutting from oneself. And that's why ruddha has two meanings, one is giving and other is cutting, separating from oneself. Giving is not so that I give somebody's thing to somebody else. I have to give from myself. That is giving. Otherwise, it's just manipulating. Does it make sense? It's quite interesting that, and even he describes this, why we say we give a slap. Yes, I was already mentioning this. When mother gives a slap to a child, how come? He says, because that red spot is the energy from the mother which comes to the child. So it is split from the mother and stays with the child. Even here he kind of tries to see that cutting from the... So this cutting from oneself into another quality is what we know as supermind. The creative, dynamic supermind which manifests the world. Yeah? It is the cutting from Satchitananda into the world. This cut will be known to us as Manas, Prana and Anna. This will be the cut from Satchitananda, as Sri Aurobindo explains. A projection of Sat will be Annam, the projection of Chit will be Prana, and the projection of Ananda will be Manas, according to his, you remember, table in the hour of God. So, if we follow this, we will see very interesting apadana, cutting off, away, taking down, drawing back, drawing onto oneself. If sampradanam is I am here, the actor, and I am giving myself away, then apadanam, I am receiving. I could receive. There was no receiving up to now. It's for the first time we have receiving in the mind, is that entity which receives. Yes, there is already a split, there is another world there, starting from the mind. It is mind of the lower hemisphere, of the inconscient which receives. and it has nothing to offer more than to receive. And Sambandha is exactly that, what prana represents, which unites heaven and earth, manas and vach, or mental and physical being, and adhikaranam is a location in which everything is located as in the material form, in the manifestation, in matter. No, I didn't want to put it immediately because it would be yes, I would anticipate. I wanted us to dwell on it and grow into it. Does it make sense? This logic of the infinite, in the grammar, in the structure of grammar. And it is not only this, but there are also three vachanas. What does it mean, three vachanas? If we start to think about this, it would be really interesting. Nominative, not only one, but two, and many nominatives. Accusatives, not only one, but two and many. Instrumentals, by one, by two, and by many. Beautiful. All possibilities are covered. I made this presentation long ago, and I still believe that it makes full sense. I want to say that within the structure of language, within the grammar, there is already a thinking of particular kind, which is absolutely deeply philosophical, and even not philosophical, psychological, and true to our nature. These karakas and these cases were not arranged at random by some mind putting things together, reflecting upon language. They were preceding, I think, language. They were forming language, forming grammar to be of this particular kind, reflecting something of our nature, of our psychological nature.
It's so beautiful because then mind and creation could be connected back.
Yes, that's why Sanskrit is considered to be that particular Sanskrit, perfectly arranged, well made. So well made means that it is well made. It's not something, you know, kind of half well made. And if you look into other languages, we will find that cases are arranged at random. They are not fully reflecting the whole vision. If I take Russian language, there are also many cases there, also nearly seven, but they are of very strange kind. Some of them are not fully fitting. German also, you will have some strange appearances, and not all the karakas will be unknown. They will be known, but they will be not reflected in vibhaktis, all of them. Did you notice this? Well,
I read it in.
Okay, somebody wants to promote Russian language. This happens once in a while. Things happen of this kind. But whatever is there, there are certain vibhaktis, certain karakas, and they are there in the old Russian language and the new. So, in a way, they are not arranged in this transparent order and manner. That's what I mean. All these karakas in every language, we cannot speak if they would be not here. We have to locate we have to connect genitive, yes? We have to have this ablativeness, which means also causality. We can't speak without causality, yeah? Because we use all the time. And this because is this causality. This is the mental thinking, because and that's mind. Yeah? And then sampradanam, giving oneself totally forward, which we don't have in our languages. We only give, and give only slaps and troubles to each other. Sometimes we give also good time. And then instrumental and karma, objective case or accusative case. And nominative, without which we cannot say a thing. These are all available in every language.
I still didn't understand why there is prana related to food, but I don't get the connection.
You don't have connection? Okay. Somebody can explain how prana is binding? And what is binding prana? Prana is binding heaven and earth, mental and physical being into one being. It is that antariksha, that gap, which holds heaven and earth together. It is that one foot is standing on the matter, on adhikaranam, another foot is in heaven, in the mental being. It is that life force which binds together the stars, the two who are one, that one thing, that prana, that mystery of life, which holds together mind and matter. If to speak philosophically, if to speak grammatically, it connects name to name in a particularly bigger context. Shows their relations. And that's what prana does. Well, if we really dwell on this system, we will discover the whole philosophy. You don't need more philosophy than this grammar. Just think about it, how it does with words, because it is exactly projecting the same order of things, which is available for our psychology and for our outer life. Yes? Maybe this I have to put into another color. Some kind. Basically, it's so overwhelming that I would not rather go into other paradigms today. And I will take a verb later and leave at this. And if you have some questions or some thinking about it, so please go ahead, some revelations.
Can you question one bit, can you still say now you have the seven cases or dimensions of existence? There's three, the one, the two, and the many. What that?
It's profound. This one and through and many. It's so profound. In every karaka, there are different ways to express itself. You can express yourself as one. You can express yourself in duality. And you can express yourself in manyness. What can be more flexible? Every case, that means, I'm giving here endings, you don't need endings. It's just for those who want to study Sanskrit grammar, Panini and endings. But when I thought about it, I went through the whole system in a view of seeing 22 arcanas, and I was surprised how powerfully it matches. First you have an actor, a magician, the one who is, yes? Then you have an Isida, a mother, the Divine Mother, who is representing him in duality to himself. He knows himself already. Not only he is, but he also knows himself. So the same line which is going now down will be in the same horizontal on every level of Karaka. And then what happens? That she becomes the mother of the universe. She carries within herself the whole universe. And all 12 stars, which represent this three number or manyness, 3 is 1 plus 2 is 3, is running around her head. She is already not the mother who is either closed with a veil over her, but unknown. Nobody ever saw her face. And when Shubhendu writes in Savitri that for the first time he saw the outline of her face, this, he refers to this mother who never saw her face. So that secret subjective consciousness of the actor is duality within, on this line. Yes? And then she carries within her vision the whole universe. This is Bahuvachanam. But it is still within the actor. It's not going out. It's not yet projected into karma. Into karma it will be projected again as one and as two and as many and again. And it's really marvelous. So as karma, one, he will be as an emperor, if you are interested in a tarot system. Emperor who represents the movement into the creation and so on and so forth. I don't want to speculate more on these, but I want to say that such a transparent and clear system of grammar, maybe it may invoke you to study Sanskrit, you know, because such a beauty of grammar you can't find in any other language.
Structure of noun, but noun is not separated from verb. And actually, I would like to reverse it, because it is the verb who has a special role inside. It's called action. It means that the case is liquid, is the verb. And noun is subject to the verb. It is a case in which you have a predominance of superior law over a noun, and there are of course complications, but generally it is a, in dictionary you always have a verb and within the case going and means going out. So the verb in this case is absent in the table you mentioned, and it is how to say important not to separate it in the context, because it is a verb which is carrying it with it, or with the both, because this mental and structured noun and verb are together. And
I agree fully with you. I'm very happy that you're saying it, but I wanted to come to it when we touch the verb and see the difference with the verb, and then we'll see Karaka is exactly that relation of the noun to the verb and nothing else. So how, of course it is there, it is fully charged, it is that consciousness power which represents the karta to himself first, and then as object, and then as doing, and then as sampradanam, as then every single movement, except of course genitive case, all of them are karakas. They are charged with the action of the noun. Now, when I was studying linguistics in St. Petersburg University, introduced such term as imperativeness of the name. It's a very tricky thing, because the name has within itself a feature of the verb. And that's what you are referring to.
Yes.
Imperativeness, because imperative is exactly, we will come to this, to the verb, is the major feature of the verb. And not the time, but imperativeness, that it can be used as a command. Come, sit, look, go. These nouns cannot do, only verbs. It's not because of time. He is going, he was going, he will be going. Not because of that it is the verb, but because the noun, the name, is used in imperative sense. It has its own command. It links things. It commands you. It has this direct second person relation, immediate context.
Because also, what this has some kind of a message always, that even when we are misunderstanding something, we are creating. So, yeah, language is creation. So, words are creations. They're creating something. Was absent, and speech is creating realities, naming is creating, and in this process of creation there should be an order, you know, some kind of a regularity, structure, and a law. So language produce or manifests a structure which enforces this eternal aspect of creation.
Right.
Which is stable, fixed.
Right.
And this is why the problem is how language changes and at the same time is eternal.
Yes, this is the eternal structure. We see it in front of us. Mm-hmm. These six karakas. You cannot change them because absolutely we can't act otherwise in the world. The world is built on this particular movement of consciousness. So all the relations, space, time, relations are reflected in this particular way. The whole universe is built on this ground, on this hierarchy, on this logic. So we are just following this logic in language. In other languages it's mixed, it's not clear. In this language it's absolutely clear and transparent.
So the spoken language can be seen as a living being having a consciousness of its own. And we as speakers, we are only the tools of manifestation.
Yes. We are the radio stations,
mm-hmm.
Catching those waves and putting it into the structure which is available to us, into those signals. Surrender
exactly
is
the same.
Yes. Surrender is already an act of created creature who is already rising and wants to give himself to the higher power. And this is all involutionary movement from up, down. There is no indication for any movement up. And it is not needed because it will repeat the same movement up. It's not needed formally, in terms of terminology, it's not needed because the movement will start from matter up to prana, to manas, to vijnana and vibhava. So this movement of self-giving is sampradanam, yes, from the supreme. But for us, it is already implying the whole structure. I was trying to explain them as if new, everyone coming up, yes? As if it is first sat, then chit is not there yet. And like this. If we look at them, satchitananda is already there, then vijnana is not yet there, so it appears there, but there is no yet mind. So then there is mind, and so on and so forth. In our case, when we surrender, all structure is already there. So we will move within this particular possibility anyhow, and sampradana will be our surrender, you are right. But it won't be the same sampradanam as it is there in this involutionary order. Not the same. Similar. Or maybe the same. Anyhow, one can leave that question because
and
this is...
Also, if we develop it, the language became analytical, those cases disappeared and were replaced by prepositions, which are called,
Yes.
So, and they
analytical relation. But look at how beautifully Panini does. He separates vibhaktis, cases, from karakas. Mm-hmm. So with all prepositions and analytical type of languages, you will have all six karakas. Anyhow, you can't speak without them. They will be differently arranged. They will have different forms or different cases, but the karakas will be the same. And they are not always the same in language. For example, if I use locative case, saptami vibhakti, I may, project some other karaka, not necessarily adhikarana. I may project some other karaka, like for example, accusative karaka. I will say grihe gacchami. Grihe is locative, but I say that I go home. So karaka will be karma, but vibhakti will be saptami. They are not matching. Panini knew about this. He saw the mismatch between formal syntactic form and between karakas, which are always the same. So as if syntax takes projection from those, so to say, universal movements of mental consciousness and produces language in that form as we know it, with all those cases. Cases are not really truly reflecting karakas. Karakas can be reflected by many cases. I can give you many examples, too many, and you will immediately recognize, oh look, it's instrumental, but it doesn't express instrumental. And that is nominative, but it is not expressing nominative, but expressing karma, as we have it in passive voice. Yes? Passive voice, karma is expressed by nominative case. And nothing you can do about it. But karaka will stay anyhow. Karaka cannot be changed. Because without it, we cannot arrange this inner space and outer space, which is the projection of it. It's a little subtle and little tough matter for all linguists, and it was a great discovery for...
I can tell in the talk that everything in India is regular, there are laws, but at the end of the codex, there's always appendix and exceptions. No, exceptions. So exceptions are as many as the rules.
Yes.
You know, the problem of putting together
something
which is out of control.
Yes. And because there is no clear system of karakas and vibhaktis in linguistics, now it is there because it was discovered in Sanskrit, and from Sanskrit it came into all that thinking that there are two different movements in consciousness. So now it is easier to think. And even now, you will find that it is mainly confused, the vibhaktis and the karakas.
Relating or understanding synthetically this relationship of these karakas to these six powers?
They are reflected. They are directly reflected in what they are. But it is not necessarily that the form of vibhakti will be exactly the same karaka. Because language has so many varieties of relations which can be always a little bit misplaced, a little bit widened, a little bit approximated, and because of that, and because of many other things which are entering into this context.
That's what I mean, could that also reflect some more integral consciousness where this is possible? It structures itself, but at the same time is not bound to this.
Yes.
And take different relations.
But that's the beauty of it. That's the eternal six karakas, and these are vibhaktis, which are in every language differently expressed. But without karakas, language cannot exist.
Can we go even further? Because language is not only creation, but this is food. It's we eat by ears. And reading or listening is consumption. So we destroy when we listen, and when we read, we also destroy, we consume, and we absorb what we take out of it. And this is a problem of recreation, or in a sense, what we do with the world, what we understand of our position here.
to construct it.
Yeah, because it's, we have to consume, but also to reconstruct the unit.
To make our own, yes?
Yeah, in a sense. If understanding is called consuming, eating, in a sense, makes sense?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the force, energy, from wisdom, from having an ear open.
In the evolution course, I said that energy exchange is information.
Yes.
Information is energy.
It is energy. It is food for us. And mind needs a petrol.
Yes, upadana. Exactly this. Cause, because, it needs a cause. Where is that cause? An effect. We know effect, but where is the cause? It looks for that particular... So anyhow, I'm kind of... Shall we stop here for today? And it's a bit tricky subject, but if you dwell on it and meditate on this, you will change your view of thinking. It's another logic, very transparent, very clear. You will also understand why the Sachidananda Vijnana and all the levels there. It's so simple, but it is so true, truly located, that it becomes even scary to think that it is, can be so simple and so profound. Without extra words, without extra explanations, just one table and everything is clear. Yes, Parame is that transcendental to them, unknown to us. We do not know who is Parama. She is somewhere there with the Supreme, of which we know, of whom we know Satchidananda in the transcendental appearance of his Paraprakriti. But she is even beyond that, the Supreme Aditi. She is even beyond Asat and beyond Sat. So we do not know. That's why we call her Parame. Yes, there is no Asat here in this system. And it's also very interesting, when we were discussing Pythagoras, there was somebody came, some Russian architect, and he said, Pythagoras made a mistake. He didn't start from zero, he started from one. And he didn't have a concept of zero. He says, one is one, two is three, three is six. That is Pythagoras' treatise. And I had to really argue with him. He didn't make any mistake, Pythagoras. Zero is not a number to be introduced into the system. Zero is something which underlines the existence of one. One is one, he says, the first statement. That means there is zero in between one. So one equals one means that one is, that means zero is there to hold that one as one. It's the only, by the way, number which is identical to itself in the whole system. Two is three, three is six, and there are all other numbers which are never identical. Only one is identical, because two is already two ones, yes, three ones, and so on and so forth. We know, we can deconstruct them, we can see what they are. But one, how can you do with one? What is one? It's quite interesting for you to think. All right, so we end today with a minute of silence.